This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
A dramatic pause says something without saying anything at all. Feet deserve a go-to like that. Like Hey Dude shoes. Light, comfy, good to go to.
Welcome back to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman. Joining me right now is Steve Lydiard. This is our post-match show of Fulham's 1-1 draw against Spurs. And what's going to be interesting about this show, Steve and myself are polar opposites when it comes to our philosophies on life. Steve is definitely glass half empty. I'm half full. Or Steve might even just say mostly empty, right, Steve?
Mostly empty, the rest realistic, and probably very, very rarely positive, yeah.
Okay, okay, and I'm mostly positive, and but I can be objective as well. So that's what's going to make this episode kind of interesting, because I think we're going to bring the positive and the negative here as we look back at this match in a little bit more detail than we did on full time. So, Steve, I'm going to give you the floor to start off. I'm calling it Steve's Rant. Steve, share whatever you want about this match, about anything to do with the fallout from this match, because I know you and I were talking about off air, you know, you keep bringing up the fact that we need a striker. I understand that and I agree with that. But my thoughts on this was a match where, again, they deserved the point and you're focusing on needing a striker. So give me your rant.
Well, we'll start off with the positive on it.
If you'd have taken...
It's not that I'm disappointed with the point, and if you did give me that before the game, I'd have bitten your hand off.
Exactly.
And the fact that we did score, I know we conceded, but we did score. And they're both a couple of good goals. You know, we did concede a world-class goal.
Absolutely.
The problem I have, and that's my glass half empty side, is if we'd had a striker, a decent striker, or anyone on the pitch that could score, that Ruben Loftus-Cheek effort towards the end would have been 2-1. If we didn't have Kamara on the field and someone that could pass the ball to Lookman, he would have been through on goal potentially again, 2-1. Okay. This is the problem we've got. Decision-making, players that aren't good, are good squad players, but they're not Premier League quality. And last night was sort of, you know, I was on a post-match show sort of doing some commentary on Facebook and sort of someone said, we'll go 23 games unbeaten. Well, that's great. To be fair to him, he didn't say 23 draws. But if we got 23 draws out of that, that isn't going to be enough to keep us up.
No, of course not, Steve. We know that.
I think something like Leeds have only lost one less game than us last time I checked. So that could have changed. But the fact is they won more games. And that is why they're around mid-table, I believe. I haven't actually checked the table last couple of days. But yeah, they're mid-table. And that is the exact reason, because they've got people that, as everyone likes to put it, can put the ball in the onion bag. So that is, again, it's going to be last day drama for us.
But Steve, they're also leaking goals like crazy. I think they are a team that, again, is feast or famine. You're talking about Leeds United. Fulham is more defensively sound. And I understand where you're coming on this, because you're right when it comes to needing a striker. You're right with needing players on the pitch that actually, you know, are Premier League quality. I know you're pointing the finger at Kamara in a very pivotal point at the end of that match where Lookman's wide open there, Steve, and he should have passed it. You know, again, we can all see that. So I understand where you're coming on that. But here's the thing. When I look at this match and I look back at it and I'll go right into my rant, it really has to do with the fact that, again, I can see the progress, Steve. You're talking about the draws, but I also look at some of these draws, some of the teams we've been drawing. You're talking about Liverpool. You're talking about Southampton, then, of course, Tottenham. Now, the downside is, I think, where you're going on this and what Emilio was talking about as well. We got to stop drawing against Newcastle United, Brighton. That is what is concerning him. I'm paraphrasing from talking to Emilio last time, but I think that's where his point was, that, listen, we need to be getting victories from teams like that. And his concern is that when we play against the bigger side, Steve, we have more of the ball. You know, again, they're not really concerned about us having the ball. When we play against teams that are around us, they're not going to give us that space. And he wants to see how we can break down and beat teams like this. And it's actually a valid point. But when I look at this, I feel like it's building, Steve. And as Rob Wilson said on the full-time show, he thinks back-to-back victories are on its way. He truly believes he can see it coming, and I could see it coming too. But I guess you, as a glass half empty fan, you're saying basically show it to me, right? You want to see it first.
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar view to Emilio on that. And we need to start picking up the points, really, because let's be honest, we had a poor start. We all know that. And it is so much improved, and it is around the corner. But we're not. We have to start picking up the points because we're playing catch up as it is, and as we all know, it's typical Fulhamish. We'll nick a point or two off the big teams, play well against the big teams, narrowly lose, draw against Brighton, draw against Newcastle, probably end up losing against West Brom. That is a definition of Fulhamish, and that is what will prevent us from staying up. Not that we're not good enough, because I believe we're probably a fifth or sixth, you know, place team,
yep.
worst team in the league. And that we'll take that this season. But
right.
We have to show that. We have to pick up the points to show that. And unfortunately, we're not doing that.
Okay. So you're looking at this. It's funny because in the title of the full-time show, basically, Emil and I were talking about putting a title, you know, again, well-deserved point, but should Fulham have gotten the victory? So I think that's where you're coming from, Steve, because the opportunities were there. And you're looking at it as two. Is it true you're looking at this as actually 2 points dropped?
Yeah, I'm in between. Like I say, before the game, I'd have taken a point. The way the game went in the first half, we could have been more than one down. But at the same time, we've got to half time. We've got to second half. We've got the equaliser. Really, in the end, could we have pushed on and done it? You know, few correct decisions, good decision making, like we were saying, as an example. I'm not going to completely throw Kamara under the can, but yep. Literally those sort of decision making can change games. And I'll be honest with you, his touch wasn't there since when he came on. You know, he's down the left at one point. He got the ball stuck under his feet where he didn't break away. Now, the problem is decision making, and you'll put at those times, you would get a decent Sunday leaguer that will be able to play that pass. That's the frustrating thing. We're not doing it. I don't understand.
Okay. And, you know, listen, that's a valid criticism, because when I'm looking at it late in the match, and that opportunity was there, but it was even beyond that, Steve. It was other opportunities with Kamara. He's like a bull in a china shop. He just runs and runs and runs. But does he have the ability to make the right decisions? And as you just said, I agree with you. I don't think he does. And I think that's an issue. So I understand where you're going on it. But the flip side to this is players that made the right decisions. You know, Adamola Lookman, you know, we had a bunch of players out there that, again, were dealing with a very short turnaround, Steve. And to go there, and actually, this to me is a huge positive. I'm going to go back to Russ's rant here. Because this, to me, is the huge positive to come out of this. And Emilio mentioned this as well. Can they fight through adversity, Steve? Can they come back from being a goal down? This is the first time they've done this. And that, to me, is a turn in the right direction. They played together as a team. And we say this all the time, Steve. If you don't take your chances, you leave yourself wide open. What do you think Spurs fans are saying right now? That's exactly what they're saying. They are killing their team right now. I'm telling you, I've listened and watched to enough. But I feel like I've seen that with Fulham. When you don't take your chances, you leave yourself open to what happened to Spurs by Fulham. Mm. But here's the thing. For me, when you look at the second half performance, I just wanted them to get through the first half, only down a goal. And I thought the first 20 to 25 minutes, Steve, we were the better side. But you saw the quality that Spurs had. They grew into the game, and then, of course, they get the goal. But the second half, you know, and again, I've heard and listened to Spurs fans complain about Mourinho's approach. And here's my rant, because like, while he sits back, you know, just protects that one goal lead, and they're not really proactive. I'm not going to disagree with that, but I think you're also taking away from the performance of Fulham, because even when they were down a goal, even in the beginning stages, Steve, they were moving forward. They were not sitting back, Steve, the entire match. Their approach was to be proactive. I'm talking about Fulham, the way that they were set up. This was not a negative type of performance at all. It was a positive performance. The tactics were positive. It was actually really just a way to take advantage of Spurs in certain points. And when they broke quickly. And they took advantage of Spurs. They, you know, again, I kept hearing how great Spurs' defense is. Well, I thought Fulham created some very good opportunities. So every time I hear this talk about how Spurs blew their opportunities, I think you're taking away a little bit of what Fulham did in this match, Steve, because they made it difficult on Spurs. And I think our club deserves a lot of credit for how they acted and how they kept pushing all the way to the end, Steve. As Rob Wilson said, do you agree with this statement? There was only going to be one winner in this match, and it was going to be Fulham in the end. It wasn't going to be Spurs in the end.
Yeah, completely agree. The game sort of going on another 10, 15 minutes or so. I mean, we started to pile the pressure on, create some really good openings. I mean, Lookman, obviously, come on. I think it might have been, Lookman being one of those that's been out with COVID. If he is, that might have been why he's...
We don't know.
That might be the reason why he was only on the bench. Right. But then obviously the other reason is to get them when they're tired. And I mean, whatever the reason was, it worked an absolute treat. But a few extra minutes for him, and he was doing damage right, left and centre. And for me, he's got to start against Chelsea at the weekend.
I agree with you, Steve. I agree with you.
Can I sort of go a little way from the round at the moment? And I've done a little bit of Cav bashing recently.
Okay.
Ivan Caballero bashing. And apart from the replay still being, I've seen an angle. I'm not sure whether he scored with his head or his back. It's a great effort. We'll say he scored with his head. But literally, he's turning into that player, that team player that we all thought was there. Yes, he needs to add. Yes, he needs to add goals to his game. Yes, he does miss some silly ones. But I'm actually going to say to him, he's starting to become the player in the last couple of games that I wanted to see, and that we know he can be. But he needs to show it regularly.
I totally agree, Stephen. What's interesting about him, and when you watched back the match, I've actually watched back this match, believe it or not, at 2:30 in the morning because I couldn't sleep. So I watched it for a second time. And it's interesting to watch how he played after he scored the goal. He looked like someone possessed because, again, the confidence just grew within him. But he played well throughout the match. But it really took off when he scored the goal. And I think he's one of these confidence type of players that once something good happens, other things can potentially happen. So that's actually a good point. But to your point, he's not consistent enough. And I'm not going to disagree with you on that. Okay, my friend, let's get into it a little bit more. And let's talk about the starting 11. What was going through your mind when you saw it? Because, again, I'll just share my thoughts. You're laughing. He's laughing. So, obviously, no Mitro. That was my first thought. No Mitro, no Kearney, couple players missing. But overall, even with Lookman on the bench, I'm thinking, this isn't half bad because I was expecting there to be even a weaker side. I thought I was actually pleasantly surprised with the starting 11. Based on everything that's been going on with the club with COVID-19, I thought, okay, they can work with this. This team can give Spurs a go, and they did.
Thoughts on the starting 11. I did have a little giggle once I saw Kearney was missing, Mitra was missing, Lookman on the bench. Obviously, because we're not privy to the club are quite quiet, we're not privy to who's been out. And Scott was saying players have come back the day before. But when you don't know that information, you look before the game, you see the lineup, and you're thinking, right, where's three, four of these players? Where the hell are they? What are you playing at? They're not even on the bench. And we still don't really know why they were or they weren't.
No.
If it's tactical, okay, you can say we've got a point out of the game, but was that game crying out for a Mitro towards the end? Was it crying out for a Kearney who had that little bit of craft? So that's my only query.
Okay.
Are they missing because of COVID issues, or were they tactically left out? If they were tactically left out, yeah, okay, we got a point. You could arguably say that might have misfired, but we'll never know. Like anything, we'll never know.
Right. And the one thing that I will say about Mitro, I do not know anything about Kearney, and none of us really do. Like, and Fulham keep all this information really just close to themselves. So none of us know who these players are. We might have ideas, but we don't know. But what's interesting about Mitro is that, and I had to be reminded of this, at the end of the QPR match, he seemed to pull up lame. So potentially he had some kind of injury, Steve. That was my first thought, is that he's being kept out because of the remnants of the QPR match. That's what was going through my mind. I did not think it was tactical, because I thought this match was screaming out for Mitro. I especially what was frustrating about this, and we'll talk about this, is when Eric Dier was dealing with a knock, I'm thinking it would have been nice to have Mitro there to really do a number on Eric Dier. And because he was struggling at one point. And, that's when I was really thinking they might miss Mitro in this match. And maybe they did, Steve. Maybe they actually did miss him. So that's going to be my question, because I actually want to ask you this. Do you think they missed Mitro?
I think we missed two things. Before I get onto Mitro, we missed Sky sort of highlights. Not Sky, the Amazon that we watch in the UK.
Prime.
Yeah, Prime. They actually highlighted one of the only times that we actually got any decent numbers of players in the box, and I still think it was only about four, actually scored a goal. And not taking anything away from Cav, because it was a good header. But when you think, if you've been getting that service in all night long, had we got that service in all night long, to someone like Mitrovic, surely he's going to score at least one, maybe two goals out of that. And that is what I'm saying. If it was tactical, which we don't know.
We don't know.
That's what I mean by it's potentially backfired. So, yeah, we can all be – that's why I'm the glass half empty, because you can be happy with a point, but then you can look and say, well, what could we have done if we'd have gone differently?
Right. And I understand that, Steve, because you're – you know, and again, I don't think you're really there when you're going to say it's 2 points dropped, but you're kind of teetering on the fence there, because you see the opportunities that were missed.
That's it. Yeah, the opportunity, exactly. And we have to start – learning whatever game it is, whether it's Manchester United, Chelsea, West Brom, Brighton, we need to learn that when the opportunities are there, we take those opportunities, or we give ourselves the best possible chance to get that outcome. And I don't think we're quite doing that at the moment. And we're getting better, but we haven't been quite doing that. And Scott's still trying to find it out. The problem is, and I honestly still think we'll be fine. We might scrape it with a game or two to go. But I still think we'll be fine. But the only reason we won't be is, as we said, a striker. And if we take too long to progress this, because we don't have the time to progress it. We're in the new year. We're practically halfway through the season. Yep. We don't have time for much more progression. We need to, hit the ground running, basically, at the sort of start of February, end of January, start of February, from now, really.
No, listen, and I understand that, Stephen, and it's all good points from you. Because when you look at it, and I watch him back the match, and that's why I wanted to bring up the topic of Mitro. And, and again, this is just my opinion. I thought he was dealing with remnants of that match from QPR, and I thought maybe that's why he wasn't included. But I thought that we missed him at times, as you talked about not having enough players in the box. And even if he was just in the box, with some of the service that we had, I think that, and again, like I mentioned against Dier, I actually think we missed Mitro. to really do some damage in there. But, you know, and again, I want to give all the players credit, but it's a good point because when you look at it, and I understand everyone clamoring for a striker because I feel the exact same way as everyone else. But on the flip side, we went and we just talked about Cavallero because you have players that are stepping up. You have players that maybe aren't that player that you want at striker. You know, he's not your first choice. He's probably your fourth or fifth choice, really. I'm talking about Cavallero, if you ask fans. But Parker believes in him, and he's getting 100% out of him. But the ceiling is not high enough, Steve, when it comes to him, because he's not a real true striker. He's not a striker. So I see where you're going on that. And when you don't have Mitro in there, it's hard. But I think in some ways, I think Parker wants to play this way. So it could have been tactical. It's interesting. That's why I'm glad we're talking about it.
Just while I was in my train of thought, with the Mitro side, if it was tactical and we've completely left him out, that last 10, 15 minutes that we, you could argue we started to lay a bit of siege to the goal. Surely he had enough in the tank to go for those few minutes and potentially get on the end of something, or even that Loftus-Cheek effort towards the end, you know, with the one-on-one. That's my point. If it is tactical, you can then lean me further towards the other way and say, well, he's made a massive boo-boo there, as Yanis would say. He's made a massive cock-up by not even putting him on the bench.
I hear you there, my friend. All right. Coming up next, Steve and I go through the match. We do our first half analysis, followed by our second half, and we will end with man of the match. Okay, Steve, let's get into it. Let's really break down this match. We'll talk about some key moments as well, because there are actually several in both halves. But let's start with the first half. And listen, I thought Fulham were by far the better side for about good first 20 to 25 minutes. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's kind of how I feel on that. And that leads to really some really good saves from Areola. You had an opportunity from Anguissa in the 16th minute, and of course Spurs had an opportunity a little bit before that. But, you know, what's interesting is that, like I said, you have these saves from Areola, but that also leads to the goal from Harry Kane. And that's kind of where I want to stop, because I want to talk about that whole situation. You and I were talking about this off air, that there was an opportunity, because you're a ref, I want to get your thoughts on it. There was an opportunity from Son, and it was a save by Areola, which led to a corner. But when we watched the replay, Steve, it looked like Son was offside. So I want to get your thoughts of all of this, because then a few minutes later, we have the goal from Kane. So I want to get your thoughts on the first half leading up to the goal, thoughts on the referee and the linesman, and your thoughts on what happened with Son there. Was that the wrong call there? Should that have been offside, and maybe then Fulham don't have to deal with that corner?
Well, yeah, if he's offside, he's offside. I can appreciate it happens so quick that, you know, Son's had the header. The assistant might not even think he's offside. You know, keeper saved it. It's gone out of play. It's a corner. But this is where looking ahead in the game comes. The ball's gone out of the corner. You've got a few moments. Can and I don't know what the instructions are for VAR myself, but do they not? Can they not review it? Because at the end of the day, I was thinking, oh, I hope they don't score from this corner, because it could have a knock-on effect. So like you say, if he's offside, he's offside. They need to review it before that corner kick is taken, because that's an important part of the game. It's not like it's a goal kick. It is an actual corner kick that could lead to a goal.
Right.
So again, I still think that should have been reviewed. And for whatever reason, it's kind of just one of those things. Oh, keeper saved it. We don't need to review it. Oh, gone out for a corner. Oh, they whipped the corner and scored. Oh, we got a problem now. Obviously, they can't rule it out because they restarted the game. But then straight away, as an official, you're thinking, I could have avoided this. So again, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So for me, it was offside and it should have been called to.
Okay. And let's talk about another decision that actually went Fulham's way in the first half. Again, there was a lot of to-do about potential handball with Adebayo. And you and I talked about this off-air. And there was a situation with Fulham as well, where the players were going crazy. But we got no review on it, so I don't want to ask you about that. I want to ask you about this, because, like we talk about, you're a referee. I thought this would have been extremely harsh to give against Fulham. So was that the right call, but not to call handball there, Steve, and give them a penalty? Your thoughts?
I think like anything, if you've got the benefit of VAR, I think it's an easy decision. The arms are clearly not in an unnatural position. It's clearly the way he's running, and it's just literally bounced up and hit his arm. If it's in real time, then someone's got to make a decision, and it could look a lot different. And obviously, so what I mean is the lower down the pyramid you go, where you don't have VAR, you don't have cameras, you don't have all these microphones assistants, it's just you in the middle, you have to make a split on the call decision, and it can look different. But the fact that we had VAR and everything, they've clearly just decided there's, and rightly so, there's absolutely nothing to answer for that. And if anyone thinks that's a penalty, then I'll be honest, you'll be giving so many a game, it'll be unreal.
Good stuff there, Steve. All right, let's talk about the Kane goal. This was a wonderful goal. You have to give them credit on the goal. They broke quickly. The cross was perfect. But the defending, again, we can be a little bit critical of the defending because no one was near Harry Kane. So thoughts on the goal from Harry Kane?
It looked like a fantastic case of either someone being a bit lazy at the back or a bit of zonal marking gone wrong, basically.
Okay.
And maybe we should be man-marking that situation. But anyway, apart from that, I think, yeah, it was a bit lazy defending, but the ball in was world-class. The finish in the end, you know, it was an easy finish for someone like Kane. But again, it was a world-class, and he's put it to a T on his head. Anyone's going to be proud of that. That would have undone a lot of teams. But I guess the only question you're saying, Russ, and I'm saying, is would every other team have given up that opportunity? Because I think the defenders would have, you know, made a challenge for that or got, you know, intercepted it. Because Kane was almost kind of 75%, 75% getting in that box. He wasn't really majorly sprinting in to get on the end of it. And he was just left to run. So that was the frustrating thing. We sometimes shoot ourselves in the foot a little bit. We do so well at the back now, as we know. But it's just that little lapse in concentration. But it's still never as bad as the days of Yanis's favourite sender horse, where you always knew there was a goal moment in him every single game, and you worried every time he got the ball. But I don't worry with us at the moment.
Okay, very good. I also want to focus a little bit as we talk about the first half about Ariel. We talked about him a little bit. Like I said, offside by Son, but you know what? Doesn't matter. He made the save, and he stepped up big, Steve. And what a difference I'm going to call him a world-class goalkeeper makes, because I think we have one. And thoughts on Areola keeping Fulham in the match?
If we stay up, we'll be lucky to keep him.
Yeah.
That said, I could see it happen because it depends who comes in for him. But you think about, I mean, I'm digressing a bit from the saves. I'll come down in a minute. But you're thinking about a guy that you would not begrudge if he said, you know, I've kept you up, Fulham, well done, you know, I'm going back to my parent club now. I'm signing for someone like, I don't know, you know, Manchester United or someone like that, because he's good enough. You think about the keepers in the Premier League, he is good enough. Yep. Because those saves are not saves that, you know, sort of your lower end mid-table goalkeepers make. They make errors. You know, this is a guy that is on par with some of the best in the league.
Right.
You know, at least the best. The saves he's pulling off are tremendous. And I think one of the guys was saying on the, I think it was possibly David James was saying today on Sky Sports that on the football show that he was saying he'd spent a bit of time and seen him come up through the academy. I can't remember if it was PSG or somewhere like that, but he said he's not surprised, you know, that he just needed a bit of game time to show his worth. And he is better than us. But at the same time, I could quite see someone like that staying with us. Russ, I have digressed from the saves a bit, but I think that opens everyone's eyes and they don't really need opening to the fact that these saves are just part and parcel of him. Yeah, okay, he might make an error down the track, but I would be surprised if it doesn't, you know, the amount of times he's atoning for that, you know, in advance sort of thing is amazing.
We can count on him, Steve. We couldn't always say that about goalkeepers for Fulham. There have been some good ones, but you can count on this guy each and every match that he is going to be at the top of his game. Is he going to make mistakes? Everyone makes mistakes, but overall, you can count. He's reliable. And I think that's a positive way to, he's very reliable. And I think that gives you confidence for your defense. And I think that just spreads throughout the entire team. If you know you have a goalkeeper that can make the difference for you, I think that allows you to play with a little bit more freedom, Steve, going forward.
Someone said last night on the post-match show in the comments, they said, is he one of the best keepers we've had? And I know it's early days, and I know it's only, a handful of games compared to others. I actually potentially think he's the best keeper we've had.
Wow. And that's you're talking about some great goalkeepers, you know, Schwarzer.
We've had Schwarzer, we've had Van der Sar. Van der Sar wasn't as mobile as Areola. Schwarzer wouldn't always pull off this kind of saves that Areola is pulling off at the moment.
That's true. That's a good point.
And I'm going to argue to date, he is the best keeper we've had.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Let's move on later on in the first half. You know, again, they had another opportunity. You have Harry Kane's header goes over. And then you have the really good opportunity from Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Steve, that, again, it's too bad because it just went wide. It was a near miss. This was a near miss. And if this goes in, obviously things are different at the half, but it was very close to going in. But, you know, again, that's been the difference with Fulham. It's near misses. And thankfully, we'll talk about the goal in the second half. That wasn't a near miss. That was a goal. But it's these opportunities. You look back and say, man, if it was just maybe 10 inches in another direction, maybe it's in the back of the net. But this is a near miss. And this leads to Fulham at the half, Steve, only being down a goal. What was going through your mind at halftime?
If we'd had a striker, we would have potentially... no.
Of course, Steve. Of course. Yeah. If we had a striker.
I mean, you can always say if you had a striker, they might have scored. They might have. To be fair, it was a great effort. I actually thought it was creeping in the post. When it went wide, I was like, well, it's only Ruben Loftus-Cheek. But no, it was. I'm not gonna lie, it was a fantastic effort, and I think the effort actually deserved better for someone that isn't a striker as well. Yep. He did actually deserve a lot better for that to find a corner. It didn't, but like you say, 1-0 down at halftime isn't the end of the world because we were even the most optimistic Fulham supporter was probably sat there thinking when we went 1-0 down, we're thinking like, oh, here we go again, you know. We don't come back from this, you know. How many is it going to be? 2-3? Can we keep it down? Getting to halftime at 1-0. I was just like, this is probably our bad half, if I'm honest, because we're a goal down and we've done really well. So second half, you know, we might as well just go for it, give it a go, and that's exactly what we did.
That's exactly what they did. Very good point there, Steve, because now let's talk about the second half. And I wouldn't call it night and day from Fulham. I would just say that they just stepped up their game in the second half from the get-go. And it was frantic in the beginning of the second half. Anyone that watched it knows what we're talking about. Because Fulham had an opportunity early on. And then, of course, Tottenham goes right down and they have an opportunity. And I'm thinking, oh, what is going to happen here? Things settled down. But Fulham were, it seemed like, constantly on the front foot, Steve. And, you know, again, you have an opportunity from Tete that, you know, if you watch back the replay, Scott Parker was, you know, again, he was not happy with us because it looked like it was an opportunity, but he hits the side netting in the 49th minute. Then you have another save from Areola on Winks. You know, it didn't look like much, but it would have gone in. So, again, it was another key save from Areola. And then you had the opportunity because Fulham were pushing hard, and this was a disappointing moment. You finally have a really good opportunity with a free kick, Steve. And I like Bobby Decadova-Reed. I really do. He needs to do better here, Steve. He hit it right in the wall. And that was a little bit disappointing. And that was in the 59th minute. But then we have the change in the match that I really want to focus on because I think substitutions can change matches. Steve, in the 66th minute, he takes Tete off and he brings Lookman on and he basically shuffles the deck and moves players around. I think bringing Lookman on at this time changed the game. What are your thoughts?
I would have brought Lookman on and clearly it paid off. I would have left Tete on though. That was the difference.
Okay.
Pace, you know, going forward, we know what his crossing ability is like. He didn't look tired to me, but he might have been. Again, we don't know what he's been suffering with or hasn't been suffering with. Right. He's been out for a while as well. Match fitness can play a part, but if he was still okay to go, I would have left him on and brought Lookman on. The more pace and power we've gotten there and the more, you know, sort of technically gifted players, it would, you know, to get crossed and so forth would have been decent. I actually think we played better in the second half as well because I think Spurs realised we're in a game when Zambo and Geese and Reed were absolutely battering Winks and co in the first half. You know, there were some meaty challenges going in. And I almost felt sorry for Winks. I was just like, oh, mate, you've been clattered twice in as many minutes.
Yeah.
And I did feel sorry for him. But yeah, I just think they sort of realised the second half, oh, we're in a game here. You know, they're actually physical. They're coming to the party.
That's
and
right.
And like you say, we did step it up a bit. It wasn't just all about the physicality in the second half. We actually took the game to them. But I think the first half did out roughen them up a little bit and sort of letting them know you're not going to have it all your own way. And I thought it was amazing.
But bringing on Lookman, I think, really gave them that spark that they needed, Steve. Because, again, we're talking about not having those creative opportunities and those goals. I think bringing him on changed the match, honestly. Because, you know, and that's going to lead to talk about a couple things. But before we talk about the goal, in the 72nd minute, because this is what scares you when you play a team like Spurs, they can just score a goal like that, Steve. They can come at you so quickly, and they just create an opportunity very quickly, and you have Son breaking in, and it hits the post. I thought it was going in, and it was very close to going in. That, again, was a sigh of relief that did not go in. But then I'm thinking to myself, Steve, because Fulham were creating the opportunities, and as I watched all of these videos from Tottenham supporters, I'm thinking about how it's like with us, and I mentioned this before, when we don't take advantage of our opportunities, I'm thinking, he missed that. We got a chance here. Something good is going to happen, and it did a couple minutes later, and it was a great cross from Lookman, and who scores the goal on a header? Ivan Cavallero. Give me your thoughts, what was going through your mind when you saw the goal.
Well, just before the goal, like you're saying, going back to when Spurs hit the post.
Yes.
I don't know if anyone noticed and whether I was daydreaming, but I thought one of our players slipped and that actually opened up the opportunity for the pass.
Yes, now, absolutely.
Now, again, we need another signing there. We need some new football boots for that lad who's wearing blades because they're clearly not good enough and he needs to learn to stay on his feet. Otherwise, they wouldn't have got an opportunity. So we got out of jail a bit there because you could say it was an error from the slip.
Yep.
Although it does happen, but yeah, the actual goal was fantastic. The ball in was brilliant again. The header, I'm not sure what it was. Header off the back. I still think it was off the back, off the shoulder. But then I've seen another replay. I don't give a monkey, to be honest. But yeah, I was there. I was just like, everyone's like, oh, it's a great header, and I was like, hang on a minute, that's come off his back. but either way, it's gone and it's fantastic. And he, like you say, he needed that bit of confidence because after that he was you know, not that he wasn't playing badly, but he was even better after that. And it just goes to show, like you say, a bit of confidence, a goal like that, a good team goal as well, and the team's just on the up straight away.
Steve. And it was a team performance, and I think that goal epitomized how Fulham played in this match. That's why we go back and I ask you the question at the beginning: was a 2 points drop? As Emilio was just thinking to himself, maybe we should have won this. Because of the way we played and the way we took it to a team that is a top six team. And, you know, we got a point, but maybe it should have been three. And that's I'm starting to come around to Emilio's thoughts on it. Because then shortly after that, we have the opportunity. We have to talk about this. You have a great opportunity. You've already mentioned this. Another miss from Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I thought Ruben Loftus-Cheek played well, Steve, in this match. And I remember the commentators basically criticizing Lookman's pass a little bit, that maybe he should have done it just a tad earlier. But what are your thoughts about the opportunity from Ruben Loftus-Cheek?
Well, I thought Lookman was going to hit it at first. I just thought, you know, when he shuffled a little bit of space, whipping a curler. But no sooner had I thought that, kind of, you know, the angle closed down. So he had to lay off the pass. It was just slightly too late. But when he got in, I thought, it's a really good chance here. And that was the difference I felt in the game, that where we need to be taking those. Because if that was Spurs up the other end, and we can say Son hit the post, but if that was Spurs at that moment, they would have taken the opportunity.
Yes, probably, I agree with that.
Probably if it was the majority of the other teams in the Premier League at that point in time, they probably would have taken that opportunity.
Yep.
That's where we're letting ourselves down. And it's not a negative, it's just the difference between turning draws into wins. And as I'm sure we'll move on to in a minute, the Kamara chance, you know, again, Kamara head down, running, running into the floor, you know, then playing a pass through. My apologies, Russ. I caught my headphone cord there. Sorry, guys. Yeah, I'm still here. I'm still alive, unfortunately.
Okay.
but yeah, no, Kamara, if he plays that pass off, again, if that's a Spurs player in that position, 2-on-1, again, I think that's 2-1 from Loftus-Cheek or for Spurs, you know, 3-1 again there. That's the difference. So we potentially could have ended up winning that game 3-1. And imagine how we would have all felt. Yeah, I mean, we would feel great with a point. Imagine coming away from that game with a 2 or 3-1 win.
Oh.
I mean, and being thoroughly deserved at that moment. I mean, I'd have loved to have seen.
We would have deserved it, Steve. Absolutely. We would have deserved it. But let's now move on, because you've already mentioned this. So we do have to talk about Kamara coming on. And in a way, he makes a difference because of his pace and his power. But he's a headless chicken, Steve. And he proved it. You know, how else can I describe it? Because when you have Lookman wide open and all he has to do is get the ball to him. And listen, I like Abubakar Kamara, but I'm not going to say anything that no Fulham supporter knows. And that's, he's not a Premier League player. He just isn't. He's just not a Premier League player. And this was an unfortunate situation here, because that was there for him. And then, as you mentioned to me off air as well, there was an opportunity where he had the ball and he got lost at his feet. And again, he's just missing that extra quality that Premier League players have. So let's talk a little bit about Kamara coming on. It's a positive in one way, but it's a negative in another.
I think, it's obviously he's not quite a Premier League player, but I don't think he's miles off. I think the problem with him is his confidence again, but he's also trying too hard. So when he's coming on, he's thinking, I've got the pace, I've got the strength, let's have a go. See if I think he's thinking I can do it myself.
Yeah.
That's why he's got his head down. Get your head up.
That's a good point.
Get your head up. Do the simple stuff. Lay off the pass. Be a hero. You've done your bit. But again, I just think he's trying too hard to impress when he gets, as you all do when you come off the bench. But sometimes it's just do the basics and that'll impress not only your teammates, yourself, your manager, and you feel a lot better afterwards. I'll tell you from experience, that's what I used to do. If I ever come off the bench, I would try too hard.
Yeah.
Try too hard to impress. And that would invariably when you wouldn't do so well.
That's a good point.
So I think you just need to sort of take a step back, and probably Parker's already even said exactly the same thing to him, or Stuart Gray has said, just relax.
Play within yourself a little bit. I think I think you're right, Steve. I think you really nailed it here. I think he's trying too hard and trying to do it all himself to just prove something. And it just is, you know, he's trying to do more than he should be doing. As we would say here in a different sport, just do your job. His job is really to make a menace, but also if there's an open player, find the open player. Use your head. And I think he was playing too much with his heart, because I think his heart was, I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to do this. And I think he's a team player. I do. This is not about him being a team player. I just think that he tries too hard to impress. He's trying way too hard to do things where sometimes you should be dialing it back and just play within himself. And he's just not doing that. And I think he hurts himself. So that's a good point. All right. Now, near the end of the match, we should talk about this. And that involves, you know, as a ref, Steve, I've watched this back several times. How could Reguilon even remotely think that he was onside here when he scores the goal? Because it was pretty obvious. He was miles off. But, you know, then I heard talk, well, that was in the first stage of this, and it was closer than you think. What are your thoughts? Was it close or was it way off?
It was offside,
but I want your opinion as a ref.
So the ball comes in. There's four players offside, yeah?
Yes.
The offside is given against a player that it goes to on the far side who crosses it in. So the ball, I believe, is played back across. The players coming onto the ball, so they're not in front of the ball, they're behind the ball. All three of those players are then onside. So because basically they've not received the ball. So at that moment, it's the second phase of play. They all become onside. So the only question is the player receiving the ball and playing the cross offside? The answer, as we know, is yes.
Yes.
Therefore, the offside is given. If he wasn't offside, it's a goal.
Okay. Okay, very good. So let's just say good that it wasn't a goal. And honestly, that would have been a sucker punch, Steve.
I thought it was a goal, if I'm honest. So when I saw it going, I was like, well, that's a good finish. That's a goal. Nice and easy finish. And then when we got the offside, I was like, that is amazing as well.
Okay. Well, even with that situation, Steve, as I said, you know, again, they created this at the end. But like Rob Wilson said, I still thought there was only going to be one winner in this match, even though you have this opportunity. But it was offside. I thought Fulham were the better side overall. And I thought if the match went another 15, 20 minutes, they were going to win this match, Steve. And it sounds like you agree with me.
Maybe not even 15, 20 minutes. Maybe just another 10 minutes. Or if we, you know, if we had a striker on the pitch, you know, we might have been actually.
Of course, we're going to go back to that.
No, but no, just we needed another one of those chances, just another Ruben Loftus-Cheek chance, anything like that. Yep. Just another chance, one more chance, and we'd have buried it. I believe that. But Okay. Like you say, it's too late in the game. We've created a couple of chances, haven't taken them, and time's just run out in the end.
Okay, very good. All right, Steve, let's end with your man of the match. Rob went with Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I can't remember who Emilio went with. I want to
Mitro.
Say
Mitro.
He didn't go Mitro, with Mitro. Yeah, Mitro. Stop it. All right, Steve, who was your man of the match?
Honestly, I heard what Rob said last night, Ruben Loftus-Cheek. He didn't have a bag, and no one, I've been thinking about it the last 24 hours, no one stood out to me, not in a negative way this time, no one stood out to me as being man of the match because it was more of a team effort.
It was. What did you think of the play of Harrison Reed? I'm curious your thoughts on how he played.
Dirty, absolutely dirty. Taking Winks out like that was completely acceptable on the night, but usually unacceptable. It was on the Fulham player. No, Reed done well. Adebayor done well. Anderson did his job.
Yeah. That's right. Probably, Emilio won with Adebayor. That's right.
Do you know what? For all the stick I'm going to give him one. For all the stick I've given him and the fact that he turned up last night, regardless of the goal, but he did get a goal off his back. I'm going to give it to Ivan Cavallero.
Wow. You're going to Ivan Cavallero on this. Wow. It's very interesting. I'm actually going to go with Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I thought he played very well, Steve. I think that he created a lot of opportunities, but it's funny because the commentators during the match kept talking about that as number 10. He needed to be more in the box. And as you were saying before, there still weren't enough Fulham players in the box, Steve, with their opportunities. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, we just don't. And it's the same. It is the same every game. We don't get enough players in the box. You know, there's times you can see four, five, six defenders in the box. We got about two players, maybe not even that. There were times they were highlighting on Sky where we've got the ball out wide. There's no one in the box. And that is because of the formation we're playing and the
I was going to say, isn't that part of Parker's tactics?
It's part of Parker's tactics, but that's also the fact that I'm going to come back to it. We don't have an out-and-out striker playing because someone like a Mitrovic gets himself in the box. Someone like a Caballero or a Lookman or a, you know, someone like that, they're not drawn that way. They don't get themselves in the box. And that's why we find, like you say, Parker's taxes, we don't find anyone in the box. And you end up sort of seeing about three Spurs players defending themselves. Mind you, I'd like to see us whip it in and see if one of those can score a goal for us.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Bonus topic for you. This is a bonus topic, and then we're going to wrap up the show. I want to ask you this, okay? Did Scott Parker basically outduel Jose Mourinho? Who won the coaching battle?
No one won it because it was 1-1. Is that a cop-out? Is that a cop-out?
That is a cop-out. That is a total cop-out.
I think Mourinho always knew we were going to go as strong as we possibly could. He probably just didn't know who we, because we keep things quiet, who we had in, who we didn't have in. But the guy, as we all know, you know, take away that side, the side you don't like about him. You've seen the documentaries about him. He plans.
Oh, I watched it.
He plans every scenario. He plans he used to plan the eating regime for all of his players and stuff like that. He does everything in detail. He would have known if these players aren't playing, these are players Fulham are going to play. This is what I'm going to play. So yeah, you could argue, even though Mourinho is going to have known that, Parker has outfoxed him on that front. Sort of the rookie has outdone the master, if you like. So it's a difficult one, but I think whatever's sort of going along with that, you know, Has he mastered him? Probably not. There's certainly things Scott can learn.
Oh, absolutely. But in this one match, did he really just, you know, set Fulham up more to succeed than Mourinho did? You know, and again, I've listened to a lot, and there's so much criticism on Mourinho's style, his counterattacking style, and how Spurs fans, again, I'm paraphrasing because I've heard a bunch of them, they can't stand it because they feel that if they're up 1-0, that it hinders them because then they sit back and they're waiting for a mistake from the opposition to get that second goal. They're not proactive. And I think that drives Spurs fans crazy that they basically have one way to play. And Steve, I think Fulham have more than one way to play. And I think Parker's shown that. So in a way, I think Parker outdid Mourinho in this.
Well, the thing for the Spurs fans to remember is if Spurs walk away from this season with 2, 3, or even 1 trophy, they're all going to be really, really happy.
That's right. And that's been my argument with them is that you might not like the style, Stephen. We've talked about this with the style of Fulham. We talked about Parker Ball last year, right? We talked about it incessantly. But if you win a title, does all that go away?
Oh, of course it does. They'll be out in the streets of London cheering on the open top bus. We've won the league, or we've won the cup, or we've won the Champions League, whatever, you know, Europa League, whatever they end up winning. Because I think they will win some this year.
Oh, I think they will too. I actually do. I think they're going to win.
Maybe even two. Maybe both domestic cup. Are they still in both domestics? I cannot remember for the life of me. But do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. And everything's going to be forgotten. Everyone's going to be happy. Oh, he's the best thing since sliced bread until they lose the next game. And then everything comes crashing down. So they just got to remember. I'd be happy to be in Spurs' position if I'm honest. But as it is, we're gonna obviously do our best to stay up this year. And we are good enough to stay up, you know. And digressing a bit, but going back to the way we started the show, we are good enough to stay up this year.
Absolutely, Steve. Absolutely. And I'm glad that you have said this. I'm glad we're talking about this because I actually had someone say this to me on the initial preview show that we did for the Tottenham Hotspur match. We did not do a second preview just because I just didn't have time. And Kevin DeVries actually messaged me this, and I found it interesting. This is coming from a Spurs supporter because I said that I thought Fulham are good enough to stay in this league. And he said, the question we always pose is, are there three teams worse? And I think the answer is yes.
Easily.
I think it's yes. Now, only time will tell because right now, as we have said and we've talked about, the position, they are in the relegation zone. But I think that there are actually three or maybe four teams that are worse than them if they can start converting draws to wins.
Do you remember the year that Southampton got relegated a couple of leagues? So they came straight back up. So in like four seasons, they've gone down twice, come back up twice. Now, it was actually easy for them to stay in the league. They dropped points. They drew games that they should have won. In the end, I think they got relegated by a single point. Now, that's the thing. It's okay being good enough. And they were good enough to stay up that season.
Right.
But on the other side, they weren't good enough because they didn't take advantage of the opportunities. Yeah. That is the only thing.
That's the other side. I understand.
That is going to see us relegated if we do not take the opportunities that we receive. And that's the only, I guess that's the only angle that I'm coming from. If that's seen as negative, that's fair enough. I think that's realistic.
Okay. And I see where you're coming from that, Steve, to be fair to you, is that, and I go back to what Emilio said, and then we'll wrap up the show. We all think it's great that they're getting points off some of the big clubs, Liverpool and Tottenham. And I'm going to throw Leicester City in there for again, that was a quality win. But what do you do against Brighton when they play Burnley? That's really going to be the difference because they won't have the space, Steve. It's going to be a different type of match. I saw that when they played against Brighton. It was a completely different type of match, thinking, well, if they could play Liverpool so well, why can't they do it against Brighton? Because it's a different style. It's a different mentality when you play against a team like Liverpool, who will give you the space because they want the space. Brighton are not going to give you the space. Burnley are going to be difficult to break down. So that could be the difference. So I understand where you're going on that. All right.
Russ, before we go, here you'll see a lovely water bottle that I have here.
Okay.
This is Mr. Ivan Cavalera, if you're watching, this is your Man of the Match award. If you contact me, I will get you a bottle just like this.
Okay. Okay. Very good, Steve. All right. Well, it is time to wrap this up. For my co-host, Steve Lydiard, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you as always for watching and listening to Cottage Talk.
It's the 90th minute and all to play for at the end of the match. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? I know I'm in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.